Good morning. Welcome to the Raytheon and United Technologies Q&A event with CEOs. This presentation is being carried live on the internet and is being recorded for replay. Presentation materials are available for download at raytheon.com and utc.com. The companies also remind listeners that the presentation contains forward-looking statements which are subject to risks and uncertainties that could cause actual results to differ materially from anticipated results. UTC's, Raytheon's respective SEC filings, including their 8K, 10Q, and 10K reports, provide details on important factors that could cause actual results to differ materially from those anticipated in the forward-looking statements. In addition, in connection with the merger to be discussed today, UTC will file with the SEC a registration statement, which will include a prospectus of UTC and a joint proxy statement of UTC and Raytheon that will contain important information about UTC, Raytheon, the merger, and related matters. It's now my pleasure to introduce Tom Kennedy, Chairman and CEO of Raytheon, and Greg Hayes, Chairman and CEO of United Technologies.
Good morning, everybody, and thank you for being here today with Greg and myself. We wanted to share some of our thoughts about something that occurred in, it feels like yesterday, but it's actually been almost a week, and that is our announcement of the merger of equals between the Raytheon Corporation and United Technologies Company. And I can tell you, Greg and I are very excited about this. We spent some time with a lot of our folks here at the Paris Air Show, and I can tell you, I talked to a lot of United Technologies folks, Greg talked to a lot of Raytheon folks, and we both came away with, we're not the only people that are excited, the rest of all our employees are excited. And I think when your employees are excited, it does send you a message that they believe there's something very solid about this. And I can tell you something else, there is a group that's pretty upset with us, and that's our competitors. And normally when your competitors are upset with you, that's actually a good sign. So with that, I will tell you a couple things here that this is the time for the Raytheon Corporation when things are going pretty good, right? We have, since 2015, we've had accelerated growth year over year. And if you look at the top end of our guidance for 2019, it shows that the accelerated growth is also in vision here for 2019. The DoD budgets are up. Fiscal year 18 budget was up, the modernization budget was up 19% year over year. And the modernization budget is the part of the budget that's essentially our addressable market. In 19, the modernization budget was up 3%, and if you look at what's going on in the House relative to the DoD budget for 2020 and also the Senate, we expect the modernization budget to be up in 2020 somewhere between 2% to 3.5%. And so we're following that, obviously, but the bottom line is there was concern that sequestration would come back in 20. The bottom line is we don't see that happening, not based on where the House is today and also where the Senate is. And actually, Greg and I were last week in D.C., we were walking the hill, both sides, the House and the Senate, and then obviously both sides of the aisle. And I can tell you there is a strong support for defense moving forward. In fact, several of the senators and the representatives we were with, actually during our meeting, they told us that they had to go get some, they were getting some classified briefings about the threat and about some of the issues that are going on. And they were obviously very concerned, but they were telling us that, hey, a strong defense is important. And it was whether we heard the same messages, whether it was Democrats or whether it was Republicans and whether it was in the House and whether it was in the Senate. So I think it was a clear message that the Congress does support a strong defense moving forward. So that should be off everybody's mind moving forward, which is great. Now, one thing I will tell you is it's not just a domestic market that's increasing for us. The international market is very strong. It's the strongest I've seen in my career. I've been with the company 36 years. And it's for two main reasons, And they shift a little bit as I go through the world. In Europe, the two main reasons, number one, is the perceived threat of Russia on the eastern border of Europe. And a strong input there, we've had some major sales, Poland, Patriot sales, Romania bought Patriot, Sweden bought Patriot over the last couple of years. So big demand signal in Europe. So the one driven by the threat, but then the other one is driven by the White House, the administration. And the administration, and you've heard this, has been out saying to Europe, especially to NATO, that we expect you to live up to your requirement of 2% of your GDP being spent on defense solutions. And we are seeing that across Europe. We're seeing companies that are either at the 2% or above. In the case of Poland, Poland is actually above the 2%. In fact, when I met with the prime minister, he asked me to go back to President Trump and tell him that they're going to hit 2.5% of GDP. So I made sure that we made that happen. But in any case, Europe is paying attention to this 2%. Not everybody is there, but they're on their path to get there, or they have a plan in place to make that happen, and they've shared that plan in place with the U.S. government. If we move over to the MENA region, I mean, everybody reads the newspapers. We see a lot of, I would say, insurgency, counterinsurgency, terrorism, in some cases, nation-on-nation stuff. We're seeing the issues with the tankers, both in the Sea of Oman that occurred a couple weeks back, and then just recently in the Straits of Hormuz, in terms of the explosives or somehow however they hit those tankers occurring. And so a lot of concern in that region. Also, the Houthis had fired, they claim, a cruise missile hitting a Saudi airport. In any case, a lot of consternation going on in that region, a lot of turmoil. Our traditional customers there are looking for integrated air and missile defense solutions and capabilities, and so our sales are up in that area for that reason. So it's a strong market for us. And as we move over to the Asia Pacific region, very similar there, threat driven, but also driven by the White House's press to get these countries to take on their own defense. And so obviously North Korea is a big concern. Obviously to Japan, South Korea. We also have China and what they're doing in the South China Sea, trying to take control over the first and second chain islands. A lot of consternation for Japan in that region. And I can tell you, Japan is trying to increase their percent of GDP. Last time I was in Japan, a very high-level official did ask me, if we went in with 1.5% next year, would that be good enough? And so all these countries are feeling the pressure of the White House administration in terms of picking up their own defense capabilities. So bottom line is, domestic is up. And I will tell you, we're aligned with something called the National Defense Strategy, which is the underpinnings of the budget. And our international is up. And so we believe over the next 5 years, we will grow sales, we will grow profit faster than sales, and we will grow cash faster than profit. And so we believe the company is on a solid foundation moving forward. Moving ahead, but looking in the rear, about a year ago, I contacted Greg and to talk to him. And the reason I did is I did understand that he was spinning off these two companies, Otis and Carrier, number one. But then when I looked at what was left, it essentially was an aerospace and defense company, a defense element, about 25% of their base. And what really intrigued me was not that, but the underlying technology that they had. And I had a little bit of an inkling on that. And then over the course of the last year, I've uncovered and looked under almost every sheet there is to really understand our technology. And if you don't know, my background is technology. I've used technology to go win many franchises, the Raytheon Corporation, and I know how to convert technology into franchises and into value for our shareholders over time. That's what I've done at the Raytheon Company. And I'm seeing a whole set of technology that from my perspective, through our DoD side, is untapped at at Pratt & Whitney, and especially at Collins, those two elements. And some of the Collins stuff actually helps us in this whole air traffic control area, which we haven't talked a lot about with our investors, but it's a whole new area that's pushing forward. And the reason we haven't really talked about it is the DoD has been outshining it, but that part is moving forward. And some of the technologies that Collins has, we can bring to bear against that market also. But bottom line is the technology's there. And so why was that important to me? So I'm going to go back, and I just talked a little bit before about the defense modernization budget. Inside the modernization budget, there's two line items. One line item is procurement, and the other line item is research, development, test, and evaluation. They say RDT&E. The RDT&E budget in fiscal year 18 went up 21%. In fiscal year 19, it went up 7%. And if we go back to where the House is and where the Senate is, the RTD&E budget will be bracketed between 7 to 10% increase over 19. So what does that mean? That means that this National Defense Strategy, where the third pillar talked about we have to catch up with these peer threats. He used to call them near peer, with these peer threats. And it specifically called out Russia and China. We need to be able to catch up to them in several areas. And in some cases, we must bypass them. And what they're doing is they're taking that national defense strategy and they're putting money behind it, which is this RDT&E money. Now, that money is what, and you've heard me use this before, is the seed corn for the future franchises. And if you haven't heard me talk about franchises and how we at Raytheon build franchises and keep franchises going for decades, there has to be a starting point. The Department of Defense is starting to create a whole new set of franchises. We have made the right investments at Raytheon to go after these franchises, but I can tell you there's more that we can go after that with the help of the technology that United Technologies has, we can expand and increase the capture of more of these franchises. This is a period in time when this is available. This is why timing, we keep getting this question, why now? Why now is we need to go after these franchises today. Because if we don't, we'll miss that window. The Army alone has six priorities. They've assigned something called cross-functional teams to each one of these priorities. Within these priorities, there is about two franchises at least per these six key areas, or in which they've capitalized into these cross-functional teams. With the technology that United Technologies has, plus our technology, puts us in a good position to go win those franchises. Again, this is not going to be there 5 years from now. If we don't act today and take advantage of that, we will miss that market. And that's why we hear about this technology and why we're so focused on the technology element of that. It's going to be a significant enabler for us and our company. And that's the so that will allow the combined company to outgrow the aerospace and defense market as we capture more and more of those franchises. And we know how to capture those franchises. You saw what we did, AMDR, takeaway, this EASR, Enterprise Air Surveillance Radar, essentially takeaway from two other incumbents. The 3D Expeditionary Long Range Radar, Next Generation Jammer, all the ones I just mentioned were all takeaways from incumbents. So we don't want to be the ones that lose franchises. We want to be the ones that capture new franchises. We know how to go do that. But the bottom line is you need the technology to go win. You have to have the highest performance at the lowest cost. United Technologies helps us with the technology to have the highest performance, and it also helps us because of their commercial cost reduction activities and how we can capture the cost element of it. And that's why I'm so excited about it. I think it's going to take us to the next level. It's going to help the combined companies do extremely well moving forward. And I believe this will give us the opportunity to capture billions of dollars of new franchises that don't just last 5 years. These things last decades. And you can go and look at the catalog of Raytheon franchises, and you'll see we know how to keep those franchises alive. We know how to build the technology moats around those franchises that keep them alive for decades. And again, this is a one-time opportunity. Go look at the budgets. It's there. It's kind of hidden. And you can see it's a one-time opportunity to go create this next generation of franchises to take this company to the highest levels possible. And with that, I'll turn it over to Greg.
Thanks, Tom. Well, first of all, as you can see, Tom is excited about the technology, as all of us are that have been exposed to this deal over the last, really, 6 months. I go back, it was almost a year ago when Tom called me. And you'll recall that was the time that UTC was in the process of deciding, do we split the company up? Do we keep the commercial and aero businesses together? We were also trying to close on that little business out in Cedar Rapids, Mr. Ortberg's business. We were busy. And Tom called me up and said, hey, what do you think about a merger? And I said, I'm kind of busy, Tom. But frankly, it took me about 5 seconds to say, you know what? We see the benefits. And not to put too light a spin on this, but you know, Raytheon's been on our radar for 10 years. Pun intended there, right, with the radar. But as I think back to 2004, 2005, when I first became CFO at UTC, there were three companies that we coveted as part of the aerospace and defense build-out. There was Rockwell Collins, which was never going to happen. Clay Jones was there. There was Raytheon with Bill Swanson. That wasn't going to happen. And Marshall Larsen at Goodrich. And of course, over the last 10 years, we have had the opportunity for all three of those businesses to become a part of the great family of technologies that we at UTC have. So when Tom proposed this to me, I said, give me a few months. I got a lot of stuff to do, right? We got to decide, first of all, on the portfolio. Once the portfolio is done, we got to close on Rockwell. We got to do the integration. But I'll tell you, once we started the discussions, it became really apparent to me that the technology advantage that the two companies could have together far outweighed any other consideration in terms of bringing these two great businesses together. We can talk later about valuation. Again, that was a tough nut. I think we got to the right spot there, though. I'd also say there's nothing wrong at UTC which is forcing us to do this today. In fact, I think of it as coming from a position of strength. The business, you know, the guidance for the year, we'll talk about that later, is all fine. The separation activities are on track. All of that is fine. But when Tom approached me, the whole idea was time is of the essence. Right? We all know time is one resource that you can't make more of. And so we decided this was exactly the right time to bring these businesses together. I would also say that the puzzle is now complete as far as we're concerned. As Tom and I have had this conversation, we don't need any other big M&A to fill out the portfolio. You know, someone would say, Greg, you know, you just went from being a conglomerate to a focused aerospace and defense, and now you're a conglomerate again. And I would argue that's exactly wrong. I would tell you that adding A&D exposure with Raytheon to the UTC portfolio is exactly the right thing to do. And it's the right thing to do, again, because of the technologies that Tom has talked about, whether it's artificial intelligence that will allow us to bring autonomy to the cockpit of an airplane, whether it's cybersecurity that will allow us to secure the aerospace ecosystem from ticketing of passengers through the flight envelope, through the aircraft themselves. And it's the same on the defense side, where we think about hypersonics and the technology that Mr. Ledoux and Pratt Whitney have as it relates to high-temperature materials, whether it's the radios and the GPS that Kelly Ortberg's business has. All of those things will bring value to the Raytheon portfolio. And that's what made this so exciting. So, look, I know it caught everybody by surprise. But at the end of the day, as you step back and you think about what was the next logical step for the UTC aerospace business, it was exactly this. Our customers are getting bigger, right? Boeing and Airbus as they consolidate, right? Boeing and Airbus trying to insource more and more work. The only way that we could be successful in the long run is to have the scale and technology of these two great companies coming together. And that's why I think this is such a compelling deal and why I always thank Tom for having the vision to see these businesses come together and to actually make it happen. So with that, let me stop and let's open it up. I know there's some questions out there. We have Kelsey and Carol here to moderate the debate, so let's have it.
Let's take the first question from Carter. And if everyone could just say your name and what firm you're with.
Carter Copeland, Melius Research. Thanks for the time, gentlemen. Just wondered if you could expand a little bit more on this technology topic. I mean, maybe give us some of the most tangible examples you can think of that lead to some of this franchise stuff you're talking about, Tom. And if you had technology gaps to speak of, you know, there are other ways to fill those with partnerships and JVs and stuff like that. Why not, you know, go that route instead of a full outright business combination? Yeah, thanks.
First of all, there's a lot of examples. I'll give you one because I think it's maybe easiest for folks to understand. You know, Pratt & Whitney and their development of their engines has to deal with one major problem. And that problem is heat and how hot things get inside the hot section of their engines. And so they've developed over, you know, their decades of doing this work, a lot of technologies, capabilities. Some of it's in modeling and simulation of heat transfer. Some of it's in material science and in developing materials that can withstand this heat. And some of it's in what we call thermal management, being able to take that heat and transfer it out of the hot section as fast as possible. And that technology, turns out, is directly applicable to hypersonics, and I will tell you, in terms of the overall hypersonics, that's one of the biggest technical challenges that everybody is facing in trying to bring these hypersonic new capabilities to the marketplace. And so right off the bat, we can tap right into that. And you say, well, why don't you just go buy that from them? And I asked Bob, I says, Bob, would you sell me this stuff? And he says, hell no. So these guys aren't going to share that technology. It's a secret sauce that they use to give them a competitive edge in the marketplace. Because the hotter you can make these sections and control the temperature in those sections, the more efficiency you get out of your engines. And Pratt, you know, lives or dies by the efficiency of their engines moving forward. So they have, if you ask about where they put a lot of technology, it's in that area. And we'll be able to leverage that instantaneously in some of these new franchises that are moving out there. That's a key area there. And I'll tell you what, technology is changing. And this is one other point. Neither Greg and I brought this up, but it's also something that is underlying in all this, isn't it? Is technology. We used to think it was changing linearly, Moore's Law. Every 18 months, processing power doubles. It turns out we were on an exponential curve, first part of which is linear. We're right at this cusp where things are taking off. And the technologies that are impacting us are additive manufacturing. You know, there's also this quantum computing stuff that's going. We're heavily engaged in that on the Raytheon side. Big area there. Machine learning. Greg did bring that up in artificial intelligence. And we have a combination. We're doing machine learning on the Raytheon side. And United Technologies is doing machine learning on their side. A combination of those two capabilities will now enable us to take those into the marketplace. The bottom line is people are not going to share their, I would call it, secret sauce and give that to another company, because that's what they compete on day in and day out. JV structures are not fast enough to respond to this exponential change in technology. So it's a speed issue. And it's an issue of protecting your most important IP. And so this merger allows us to essentially overcome those areas and take that technology to the market in the fastest way possible. So.
Ron?
Good morning, Greg.
Good morning, Ron.
Tom. So there's a concern, Greg, that you're being an empire builder here, that this is scale for scale's sake. And that the business will somehow be less focused, and that you're back to being a conglomerate all over again.
Was there a question there?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, what do you think of that?
I think it's absolutely wrong. I mean, let's first of all, if I was going to be an empire builder, I'm not sure I'd have sold Carrier. I'm not sure I would have sold Otis. I probably wouldn't have sold Sikorsky. We probably wouldn't have sold the Hamilton Sunstern industrial units. The whole focus of our business in the last 5 years has been, how do you tailor a portfolio that is focused on the customers and end markets that you want to play in? And I would tell you, this transaction gives us exactly that. Look, we were 27% defense. We didn't spend a lot of time talking about that, but with the acquisition of Rockwell, we got a world-class defense business on top of what Bob already had with the JSF franchise and many other things that Matthew Bromberg sitting over there has with the military engine business. We're in that marketplace. And again, I'll go back and I'll defend the scale comment, because I think as I look at Boeing, what they're trying to do, as I look at Airbus, as they talk about insourcing the cells and interiors and everything else, they want a $50 billion aftermarket. How do we push back? How do we compete against the Boeings and the Airbuses of the world? You know, I think this is a transaction, this merger of equals, that gives us unprecedented scale. We get a great balance sheet. Right, we get the opportunity to return a lot of capital to shareowners in a very short period of time, 18 to 20 billion over the next 3 years, and we get this technology that is second to none. These are the company jewels that we're talking about being able to share, and you don't share those through JVs. You spread risk, you spread investment through JVs, but you don't share technologies. And I think this is, again, the compelling reason that Tom and I decided this is the right thing for both of our shareowners.
So, next question from Sheila.
Sheila Kayali from Jefferies.
Sheila.
So there's been a lot of misunderstanding about who got the better deal here, so this is a question for each of you. Greg, given the 57-43% ownership structure, and how did you value the Aerospace RemainCo and the GTF cash flows about to turn? And then, Tom, the same question for you. How did you think about it from Raytheon shareholders' perspective, given your pristine balance sheet, and how do you think they got a fair deal?
So, look, the valuation was the biggest challenge of bringing these two companies together, because UTC Aerospace does not have a market value. And so Mike Dumais and Toby spent a lot of time together trying to figure out what is the right methodology. You can take, you know, we looked at multiples, you know, you look at EBITDA, you look at, you know, EV, you look at all of those things. At the end of the day, we thought the best way to value these businesses is to look at cash flows, which is the same way I believe most of you value businesses over the long term, is discounted cash flows. And so we spent a lot of time with Toby and Tom explaining the UTC business, what the cash flows look like. But the key for us was to get full and fair value for the things that we had invested in. That means Rockwell Collins, right? So $600 million of synergies, that's baked into the DCF. The investment returns that we're going to see on GTF, and we talked about a 44-year DCF model of GTF. I recognize after 20 years it probably doesn't matter. But the point is, there was a level of detail here to make sure that nothing was missed in terms of the value of the aerospace business. And we did the same thing with the Raytheon business. We took a look at their numbers, we took a look at their growth rates, we took a look at the programs. All of this at a level of detail to give us comfort in terms of what is the intrinsic value of the Raytheon business versus the intrinsic value of the UTC Aero business. And I would tell you that both of those businesses, I think you would all agree, are probably undervalued today in the market. And that is one of the challenges in this whole deal, is when you have an undervalued stock, how do you go about a transaction that makes sense for both shareholders? And that's why we came back to this DCF. And you can look, over the next 5 years, we'll generate, how much cash, Akhil, over the next 5 years?
40 billion dollars
of cash, right? If we look at just in 2021, if we take a look at the $8 billion of cash that we're going to generate, $4.7 billion of that comes from UTC, $3.3 billion comes from Raytheon. The fact is, if you look at all of the cash generation, it comes back to just about that same ratio, whether it's 57, 58, 42, 43. But the fact is, I think we got full and fair value for all of the investments, and I think Tom, in terms of at least from our perspective, it was the same outcome.
Right, and so let me follow up on Greg. We spent an enormous amount of time on evaluation. It was an enormous amount. And as Greg says, we did use multiple methodologies. The one that we felt when looking at all the methodologies that was closest to, I think, fairness for both companies was the discounted cash flow. But we use the other methodologies to understand where that fit. And I can tell you in the end game, all the methodologies tended to align in terms of the distribution of the 43%, 57%. So it wasn't any one, and you know, one that drove us, but we used the discounted cash flow to kind of make sure we had fairness between both sides moving forward. And bottom line is, with the amount of time we put into it, we feel very comfortable with this valuation.
Get my mic up. Just one quick other comment. As we looked at the five-year cash flows that Greg talked about, cumulative basis over 5 years, the contribution from both sides is 58-42. So you can talk about one particular year, you can talk about a point of time, but when you look at five-year cash flows that Greg was talking about, it's 58-42 contribution from both sides, right? And that's been pressure tested to some extent. Obviously, it could be wrong, but that's where we are as part of the valuation.
Thanks, Akhil. Who's next?
Let's go to Miles. Thanks. Miles Walton, UBS. Hey, Tom, you talked a lot about the technology as being a driver to the transaction. I'm just curious, as you looked at alternatives to creating value, you have an untapped balance sheet. How much thought was given into going down the path of using that balance sheet for existing Raytheon shareholders, as some have done?
So you just leverage up and buy back a bunch of stock?
If you think
we'd be out of business in 10 years based on where the Department of Defense is going. We would miss this sweep of new franchises that's coming online. We'd be out of business in 10 years. Or we'd be selling at a fraction. We would do a major disservice to our shareholders.
Let's take the next question from Julian.
Julian. So Julian Mitchell from Barclays. Maybe just following up on the cash flow commentary. You know, you had $6 billion of free cash this year, $8 billion in 2 to 3 years' time, 2021. Mm-hmm. Maybe give us some color around not the split between the two companies, but some of the levers around, you know, EBITDA versus CapEx and working capital, and also the extent to which you think that $8 billion number is conservative or aggressive.
Yeah, so the $8 billion numbers I mentioned before, right? That's $3.3 billion from Raytheon. It's $4.7 billion from the aero business. That's about twice as much cash as I think Kelly and Bob are generating today. That comes from three places. It comes from a reduction in CapEx, finally. It comes from better inventory turns as production ramps up at both businesses. And it just comes from higher net income. I think if you look at the business on an EBITDA basis, of course, it's even better, right? You're talking about a tremendous, especially as we consider this merger with Raytheon, there'll be a tremendous amount of amortization out there. And we'll be looking at ways to measure the business without that, because I think it'll show a truer picture of the true cash generation. I said this last week on, I don't know, wherever we were, one of those sessions, but we will be a cash machine. And that cash gives us optionality. It gives us options to return to share owners. It gives us options to invest in all of this new technology. We're not going to be capital constrained in the new world.
Yeah, the only thing I'd add is that for the Raytheon shareholders, you know that in 2021 we have a step up in pension contributions of about $600 million. So once that once that steps back down again, this $8 billion would have been closer to nine billion. So moving forward, so bottom line, it's a great cash generating company.
I think we got time for one more. Nigel?
So last question, this is big pressure. Nigel Coe from Wolfe Research. Thanks for the detail, guys. So can we talk about change of control? To what extent does this deal trigger change of control clauses with customer contracts? And maybe just touch on change of control in terms of executive compensation as well.
Well, let me start, because obviously change of control was a big concern at the UTC level because of some of the contracts. Having just lived through this change of control with Kelly's business, we were very, very cognizant of the fact we did not want to trip change of control. And that went into all the discussions that Tom and I had around this merger of equals process. But at the end of the day, we don't trip change of control. There is no change of control for any of my leadership team, for myself. We've waived any type of compensation. There's no big payday here for the UTC management team, nor, I think, Tom, is there any big payday for you, because Tom's actually waived his change of control. So I think, again,
it's not minimal, by the way. And the reason I did is I'm a believer. I'm a believer that we can make this the best aerospace and defense company in the world based on the technology that we have. And I've been working with Greg here for a year. We have a whole set of plans in place on how we're going to go monetize this capability moving forward. But I'm a believer, and I'm going to be here for 2 years to work side by side with Greg to go take this company to the next level. And I did. I did waive my change in control, and you can go up and look in the proxy and see the amount of money I put to the side to go forward with this, because I believe the upside in this company will more than make up for that.
This is not about enriching management. It's about enriching share owners over the long term.
Right. And it's really about building a great company with great people. Each of the businesses separate have great people, but I think combined, we really will be the best aerospace and defense company in the world. 50% domestic, 50% international, 50% commercial, 50% defense, with an underlying technology base that's second to none. And I think that's the company that we will have. That's our vision, and I believe it's within the grasp of us to achieve that. And you can see my dedication to make this happen just by the fact that's one element of what I've done to be part of this, is to waive my change of control. On the other part of the question, part B, where is there impact to any contracts that Raytheon has? We're looking at every one of our contracts. Right now, we don't believe there's any. We'll have that information out, finished up here in the next couple months. I'll let you know, but right now we don't have any commercial contracts that we believe have any clauses in them that cause a concern. But yeah, you have to go through every single contract just to make sure.
So I want to thank Tom for joining us this morning, but I also want to thank him for the passion and for the leadership on this technology question. These businesses come together because of technology and because of the foresight that Tom had to bringing the businesses together. So I want to thank the whole Raytheon team. I want to thank the UTC team who put all this together. It's going to be a great deal, and it's going to be an even greater company when we're all done. So thank you, Tom. Appreciate it. And so what we're going to do, we're going to take about a three-minute break here while we change out. We're going to move over to the UTC Investor Webcast. I just ask you to remain seated while we get set up for that.
I apologize for leaving, but I have some customers from MENA that want to close some deals, and I like to close deals. So.
Thank you, Tom.